everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our program. And together, we welcome you to the program in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. It is Friday, May 14th, 2021. Our radio station is 1030, Tucson's trusted voice for news talk, KVOI. We're in our 11th year here on the Buckmaster Show. You can listen to us not only on the radio, but of course on the internet and live stream at buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Friday, we'd like to do a big shout-out to some of our media friends, some of our partners. They've been with us a long time, like TucsonSentinel.com, the Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. The Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, Tucson Fire Chief Chuck Ryan makes a return visit to the Buckmaster Show. Chief Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. Thanks for having me back.
Chief Ryan now on the job a little over a year and a half already. He is the 28th Tucson Fire Chief. He came to the Tucson area from Fairfax County, Virginia, where he was involved with the Fire and Rescue Department there. Also with us for today's interview, Dylan Smith, editor and publisher and founder of the now 11-year-old online news service, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan is vice president of the Arizona Press Club. He's the immediate past chair of Lion Publishers. Lion is an acronym for Local Independent Online News Publishers. Dylan, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me on. Look forward to learning a little bit about what the fire department's been up to.
Always a pleasure to have you, Dylan, on the show. And it's always a pleasure to bring the fire chief with us on the program, because so much publicity seems to center around Tucson policing and the issues there, Chief, and the troublesome and very concerning issue about losing officers who are looking for greener pastures, looking for a better opportunity and more money, and an escalating crime rate. And a lot of times the fire department kind of flies under the radar screen. So I think our listeners would like to know, what is your staffing situation right now, Chief Ryan?
So right now we have an authorized headcount of 632 sworn personnel. We're about 35 to 38 people below that, just due to normal attrition and retirements. The good news is we have a recruit academy that will graduate on June 11th, which will put 30 new firefighter EMTs in the seats of Tucson fire trucks.
Was it hard to recruit people? Is it hard to recruit people?
It's become a challenge to some degree. Tucson Fire historically has had, every time we've done a recruiting effort, has had over 1,000 applicants, typically on the order of 1,100 to 1,500. The past couple of times around, the numbers have been a little bit lower, still high, 700 to 800 to 900. But to me, it's a noticeable drop. We're hopeful that we've done some more targeted marketing this time. We've kind of spread the news a little bit more widely, using social media as a vehicle to allow us to let people know that Tucson Fire is hiring.
And not only for men, but opportunities for women.
Absolutely. I would like nothing better as a fire chief than to expand the number of women firefighters and paramedics in our workforce. It's a challenge faced by every fire chief in the country. It's traditionally a male-dominated profession. But we want to make sure, we are making sure, that we don't have any barriers to application or processing through for women applicants who are interested in working for us.
What are some of the basic requirements to be a firefighter? Education and physical, I would think, come into play. Your physical strength has to be a factor.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So minimum educational requirement actually is a high school diploma or GED, okay, of the two. But the physical requirements, so for many years, fire departments operated independently in terms of what sort of physical standards they imposed upon applicants. And more than a decade ago now, after a variety of lawsuits, which were probably very well-founded, the Department of Justice, U.S. Department of Justice, became involved and worked with a variety of labor groups, to include the International Association of Firefighters, to develop a standardized what's called the CPAT, Candidate Physical Abilities Test. And there's 7 or 8 timed evolutions that a candidate has to go through. They don't have to have any prior firefighting experience, but there are a series of evolutions or exercises that simulate job tasks.
So it's standardized rather than in the old days it would be each department, well, you're going to have to carry X amount of pounds, and then another department may have a completely different requirement.
Exactly.
So you've got standardized federal requirements for
tests. It's not so much a federal requirement as it's a federally approved test.
All right. Let's bring in Dylan Smith from TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan.
It strikes me, and maybe this is just my outside perception, but there seem to be a lot fewer major structure fires these days than there were, you know, say 20 years ago. Is that the case?
Yes, and that's a good thing. Actually, here in the Tucson area and nationally, structure fires are down. That's due to improved building codes, more stringent inspection standards, new construction standards, things like that. And I think a better overall awareness in the American population about the importance of fire safety in the home. Right now, here in Tucson, as in most major cities, the vast majority of our call volume, about 85%, are medical runs. The remaining 15% are structure fires. But I will say this, Dylan, during the period of COVID when I would have expected our medical call volume to go way up and our fire call volume to go down, it was exactly the converse of that. Our fire activity here in the city is significantly above where it was 12 and 24 months ago. So it's an interesting dynamic, and I was actually commenting on it with some fellow fire chiefs around the state just the other day who had similar experiences.
So during
do you have anything that accounts for that increase in fires? Why did that happen in your assessment?
Anecdotally and just purely my assessment, people being at home far more frequently, doing things in and around their home when they would have otherwise been at their work locations, is a big piece of it. That's what I can attribute it to mainly. If I had anything to point to, that's the only thing I can think of that would drive those numbers.
Just people cooking more meals at home.
Sure, running their appliances more frequently, all of that stuff.
85% of your medical, you say 85% of the calls are medical related. Is it going down at all? Have you noticed with the drop in number of COVID cases, people getting vaccinated? What is your assessment now of that?
So we're on pace to exceed our call volume from calendar year 2020. The call volume is increasing, but the percentage of calls tends to remain the same. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And with the COVID, has there been a reluctance in some departments around the country, police and fire, to get the shot? How are your fire? What's the situation overall at your department?
So let me start with this.
Okay.
The city manager determined early on that we were not, as a city, going to mandate the vaccine for city employees to include our firefighters and paramedics. That being said, there is in our city system a voluntary reporting, if you will, that people can submit that they've gotten their vaccine, both vaccines, and it's strictly voluntary. So what I can tell you is this, based on those voluntary reporting numbers, Tucson Fire has about 30% of its workforce who have advised us they've been fully vaccinated. I suspect the number is higher, but I can only speak to what the voluntary reporting numbers are.
Hmm.
And I'll tell you, you mentioned nationally, mm-hmm. there is a little bit of vaccine hesitancy for some reason among EMS and healthcare workers. I'm sure there's a lot of reasons for it. I mean, our workforce, generally speaking, is a younger, healthier workforce, probably less worried, I guess, about contracting the virus.
Let's try to work a quick call in. Amy is with us on the live line. Amy, you're with the fire chief, Chuck Ryan. Go ahead.
Are your medical personnel trained in responding to people with multiple chemical sensitivity?
Hi, Amy. Yes. So our paramedics and EMTs receive training in a broad spectrum of symptoms, signs, illnesses, so on and so forth. And so, yes, MCS, multiple chemical sensitivities, is one of the things our folks get trained in.
Dylan, come on back into our conversation.
Sure. Just in general, how has the past year dealing with COVID been for the folks in your department? Did you see a lot of emergency calls based on off of that, or were things essentially the same?
Early on, Dylan, we saw a serious uptick in COVID-like, you know, people reporting either that they had COVID or believed they had COVID, reporting COVID-like symptoms. There was a big spike in it, and I think there was because of just general fear and uncertainty in the community. Mm-hmm. It kind of leveled off and tapered off. I think the peak of it, we were responding about 30 to 35 times per day in a 24-hour day to somebody calling, reporting, feeling like they had COVID or COVID-like symptoms. It's down in the single digits now, and there's days where no calls come in for that type of response.
And you'd kind of attribute that to, especially early on, with people being so unfamiliar and sometimes, terribly frightened about what was going on.
Yes.
And not knowing how to deal with it except for calling 911.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We talked about structure fires. Dylan brought that up, and actually I kind of brought that up to you even before we began our conversation. It just felt to me like we've had, over the years, less structure fires. However, our wildfire season is a real problem. We've got 1 inch, officially, of rain in Tucson area, in our area, 5 months into the calendar year. We're all worried. We don't want a repeat of what happened last year, where the Catalinas were in June and into July burning, it seemed like, from one end to the other. How concerned, Chief Ryan, are you about the wildfire season, and what preparations is your team preparing for?
That's a great question, and candidly, I'm very concerned based on the climatic conditions we're dealing with right now. Here in the city of Tucson, you know, the Sonoran Desert, it presents a little bit of a different picture landscape-wise with respect to rapid fire spread, right? We don't have a large trees where you can get that tree-to-tree canopy jumping. So the ground growth tends to burn a little more slowly. But it is hot, dry, and breezy here, windy, outright windy sometimes. I'll point to an example that occurred in September of 2020 in Medford, Oregon. Not a heavily forested city. It's Oregon, so they have trees and things like that. But a fire started in the National Forest close to the city, windy, high wind conditions. The fire moved into the city limits in what we call the wildland-urban interface. And then structure by structure, the city of Medford was pretty quickly decimated by a wildland fire in a relatively urban setting. I'm not trying to put fear in people's hearts. But
bring up a good point, because I was up in Medford actually last June, and I was struck by the similarity of the physical layout of Medford, Oregon. We are surrounded by mountains here. Medford sits in a valley, and kind of a similar layout. And so I think you bring up a very good point in what could be a very troubling situation if a wildfire got out of control in the city of Tucson.
Yes, and we have the issue with the washes, you know, the arroyos and fires starting in there and in some of the underpasses, and if that spreads unchecked on a windy day, the structures actually become the fuel for the fire and can easily spread from one to the next. So what we encourage people to do, you mentioned the preparations, we're doing a lot of we're working on public media campaigns to make people what we call, the U.S. Fire Administration calls, make them fire wise. People should be fire wise. Be aware around the your homes to keep brush from touching your home. Keep defensible, we call defensible space, clear space between your home and vegetation, because that is how wildfires gain traction in an urban environment, is having that vegetation on top of the structure.
Do you have a special truck for this now? Or?
So we have, yes, we have added to our fleet what's known as a Type 3 wildland engine. We have two Type 6 brush tenders, so these are all 4x4 vehicles, and the different typing is based on a national response plan model that FEMA issues. But the lower the number, the more capable the equipment is. Let me put it, that's the easiest way to explain it. So a Type 3 engine can carry a crew of six. It carries, I believe, 250 gallons of water, pump and roll capability, four-wheel drive, all-terrain capability. We have that. We have our brush tenders in service in the city as well.
And this can get, these kind of vehicles can get into areas where a big truck would not be able to.
That's exactly right. They have a much shorter wheelbase, much shorter footprint than our typical structural apparatus.
All right. We're going to continue with Chuck Ryan, the chief of the Tucson Fire Department, on the Buckmaster Show. Dylan Smith also will continue with us on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. But right now, I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town, Chief. That's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Comfort food, Chief Ryan, has been especially important over the past year. Are you always ready for a pastry like I am?
I am consistently ready.
I'm thinking about particularly one of those beautiful almond Danishes from up at Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Open right now for lunch. They open for breakfast at 6:30. So check it out. Walk into the bakery. You will have fun. There's plenty of places to sit outside, some places inside, or you can look at the menu at monasdanishbakery.com. Order online or call ahead and have your pastries ready. We'll be back with Chief Ryan after this.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sorita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sorita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
All right, here we go. Part two of the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our Friday Focus interview today, Tucson Fire Chief Chuck Ryan is with me in studio and on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dylan Smith from TucsonSentinel.com. Chief, I want to talk a little bit about it was a rebuild of a fire station, but it is something new and coming in that will come in very handy. Tell us a little bit about the funding. What was the funding source for the new station?
Sure. So the rebuild of Fire Station 9, which is at Wilmot in Eastland, started just last week. We had the groundbreaking ceremony. The funding for it came from what's known as Tucson Delivers, or Prop 101, which predated my time here, but was enacted by Tucson voters back in 2017 for a five-year half-cent sales tax to help support roads, public safety, infrastructure, things like that. So it's been a long time coming and long overdue, and I'm really glad that we got this first project off the ground, so to speak.
Tucson is there's a lot of real estate to cover in this area. I think it might be one of the largest as far as in terms for a million people in our area. The city of Tucson itself is so spread out, and you've got a lot of ground to cover. Do you have what you need as far as the location of your stations? How many stations do you have?
So we have 22 stations located throughout the city limits. As the city grows, you know, annexation and as infill occurs, over time, we'll probably have to look to add stations to the system. We'll have to do some serious long-range planning on that, because right now, you know, let's say we have 550,000-ish residents of the city of Tucson. That number swells, obviously, during the business week. You know, our crews are pretty much maxed. I'm not going to lie to you. They're busy every day. And so as the city grows, the infrastructure to support public safety here is going to have to grow with it.
Dylan Smith, come on in.
Indeed. Sort of related to that, I want to ask you about response times. You know, do those vary widely throughout the city? And are you comfortable with how quickly you're able to get to some of these calls?
Generally, Dylan, yes. We do have some challenges in some areas where, a lot of it depends on time of day, traffic conditions, where a unit may be, because, sometimes the assumption is, oh, there's a fire truck in the firehouse and that's where they're responding from every day. And that may not be the case. They may be clearing another call on a far side of their initial response area and have to go all the way across it to get to and still be the closest unit and get to that response. So the mm-hmm. response times, you know, they go up and down, but generally speaking, we are in a good place. We could be better. I'll be very candid with you. We could do better, but the fire trucks can't go any faster. You know, the cars can't get out of the way any faster, and that's part of that infill and that supportive infrastructure I was referring back to. And in order to maintain those good response times, we're going to have to plan for the future.
Somewhat related to that, when I mentioned to some folks in the Sentinel staff this morning that I'd be speaking with you, somebody raised the question of why, when you have an ambulance call, an emergency call, why does a fire truck generally show up as well?
Yep, that's a great question, and one asked nationally. So every firefighter in the city of Tucson, to include yours truly, is a minimum emergency medical technician. Then we have the higher, more trained paramedics on our paramedic trucks and on some of our fire trucks as well. So if the closest unit to somebody's medical emergency is a fire truck, then the fire truck goes, because we have the trained staff and the equipment is carried on there to perform the patient assessment, initiate patient care until the medic unit or the ambulance arrives.
So you're trained as well, right, in the EMT?
Yes, sir.
So everybody on staff has some kind of minimal training?
Correct.
Wow. I want to ask you about the 911. There's been a real dust up over there at 911. They've had a variety of challenges from staffing and morale issues. I know Mike Ortega, the city manager, has put one of his someone he has a lot of confidence in that position, Chad Kazmir.
Kazmir, yep.
Kazmir is now kind of overseeing 911. How would you characterize what's going on over at the center?
So, 911 centers nationally are struggling with staffing. I don't know of a 911 center in any major metropolitan area that does not need more people. It is not an easy job. It is a very sedentary job. There's a lot of stress that goes with it, you know, and they handle. Far more calls come into the 911 center than get ultimately dispatched as police or fire emergencies. So they are really dealing with really stressed out people very early on in any situation. So it's a tough position. It's a tough job, and it's tough to recruit for that and to keep people in it. Mr. Ortega and mayor and council are working to, you know, improve the wage situation. But money isn't everything. It goes a long way, certainly, and we need to be competitive in the marketplace. But it also has to be about, a culture reformation and making the position, make sure that people coming in understand what they're getting into, what the expectations are, and then the culture of keeping them there and making them feel valued. And I think Deputy Chief of Police, Interim Director at 911 Communications, Chad Kazmir, is doing a good job.
I mean, it's the kind of job that... not everybody is cut out for. A lot of people don't want to get near something like that with that kind of stress level.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of training that goes into it. They don't just show up the first day and start answering 911 calls. There's a solid 6 weeks or so of daily training before they're cut loose on the phone lines to start engaging with callers.
You talked earlier about the first new TF. The station built with the Tucson Delivers sales tax funds that was passed in May. The anniversary for that we're 4 years into that already. That was a five-year program, the Tucson Delivers program. The voters approved what appeared on the ballot as Prop 101. What are you hearing about re-upping for 5 years?
So conversations are occurring. I can tell you mayor and council have had these discussions, certainly among the public safety directors, transportation director. The concern is, you know, what next? What's the version 2.0 look like? Because there's going to have to be something so that we don't wind up, 3 years past the sunset of Prop 101 in the same boat that Tucson was prior to Prop 101. That's not a good business model. So we have to find some sustainability. And we were discussing a little earlier the cost of these fire trucks, ambulances, the equipment that goes into them, police cars even. I mean, they're not just your standard four-door sedan, right? So these things, and they're life-limited. In a busy metropolitan area like Tucson, the miles add up quickly. The road takes its toll. The climatic conditions take their toll on this equipment. And they only last for us about 10 years before
they
have to.
And that equipment can cost up to $1 million per vehicle.
Yeah, the ladder trucks are the most expensive, and they're close to $1 million.
Wow. Let's go to Mike, who calls us at 790-2040. Mike, you're with Tucson's fire chief.
Yes, sir, chief. I'd like to describe briefly a long-running concern I have. An area across the street from me, it's a broad area covered with trees and heavy brush. This is a common area for another planned community, cut off by a wash, so it's kind of forgotten. Someone was over there a while back with loppers, taking down lots of the branches, and there's just all kinds of stuff over there. Because I worked years ago fighting fires for the Forest Service, and I've seen what can happen in that kind of situation. Now, I've been told that code enforcement has no interest in any kind of fire hazard. Is there anyone who would be... have any interest in looking at this and making a determination?
I'll tell you what, I would say our partners in code enforcement do have an interest. I wouldn't say they don't have an interest in fire hazards. We have to We have to be mindful of private property. If it's on private property, then there's steps that need to be taken. There are legal steps to go through to help abate a blight issue, if that's what it is.
It's not blight. It's fire hazard. Just, is my real concern.
Just growth, yeah.
I just look close, yeah.
Yeah.
All of this dead growth over there and brush and so on, I think it could explode. And, you know, when it's 115, winds.
So who would you suggest?
So call and I don't have the number handy, okay. but go on our website and there's you can submit either through email or call our general phone line at headquarters. One of our admin staff will take your information. We can send crews over there and perhaps sit down with the other community that has this growth on it and sit down with their community leaders and talk about a plan about why it's important that they keep that area up.
Okay, thank you, Mike, for calling. Dylan, do you have a quick question to wrap it up, please?
Well, I was just going to comment that I need to go check along my alley and make sure the weed situation is taken care of back there before I get a ticket from code enforcement.
All right, Dylan, stick around with us. I've got some things for you after we let the chief go. So Chief, we've got another class. You said, let me see, 38 new firefighters coming on board?
30.
Okay.
30 graduating June 11th.
Perfect. And then a new class, if anyone's listening and saying, you know, maybe that'd be a career for me. What do they do?
So right now, the application period is open for our next Recruit Academy, which will start in January of 2022. The application period is open through June 6th. And if they go to tucsonfirejobs.tucsonaz.gov, all the information is there. There's a video. I put a video on there laying out some expectations of the fire chief, what I expect of applicants, what they can expect of us. All of the physical requirements for the applicants are there, the background checks, things they need to go through. It's all the information is there, tucsonfirejobs.tucsonaz.gov.
All right, Chief Ryan, have a great summer. Let's hope we have a safe summer and have no major wildfires, certainly in the Tucson Valley. Thank you, Chief.
Thanks, Bill. Really great to be here.
All right, that's going to do it with our Friday Focus interview with Chief Ryan. Dylan Smith, I've got some things to talk with Dylan about. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We'll be right back.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks. A modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley and on the web at noblehops.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Friday edition in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our thanks to Chuck Ryan, the chief of the Tucson Fire Department. Dylan Smith is with us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dylan, just before the news, well, actually, the CDC made their announcement about the change in the mask situation for people who are fully vaccinated. That news broke right before my interview yesterday with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. And at the time, I asked Mr. Scott whether or not he thought that the county would be making some changes to the mask ordinance, which has been in effect since December of 2020. At the time, Mr. Supervisor Scott said he didn't know if there would be changes. I don't know if we know, but we'll know, I guess, at 3 o'clock this afternoon, won't we?
Yes, there's a special meeting of the Board of Supervisors being held this afternoon to review the latest info from the CDC and potentially change that ordinance, whether to get rid of it altogether or to change things up to keep certain of the restrictions that the CDC is still recommending. We'll have to see just which way the county moves. And then the city of Tucson is basically intending to conform to whatever the county does, so that we don't have big differences between what applies across all the county and what the city is saying. So there are still a number of recommendations that the CDC is making. They're not saying everybody take off their mask. They're not saying if you are fully vaccinated, you can take off your mask whenever you want. There's still a measure of caution and being a little bit aware of our surroundings. If you're going to be around a bunch of people you don't know, you should still be a little bit aware of the risks that you're taking.
The benchmark that the county has set for the mask ordinance, and I think, as I recall, what Supervisor Scott was saying, 10 cases per 100,000. How close do you think we are to that right now, Dylan Smith?
Well, we're sort of bouncing around right at the various benchmarks that were set both by the county and by other authorities, the state and the feds, as far as what is a risky situation, when is the pandemic continuing, when is it declining. Over the past couple of weeks, Arizona has edged back up into the red zone on a couple of these things. There's that number that we've heard so many times, the R-naught number, that measures whether it's actually growing or potentially on a downward slope. We're back up into people are actually spreading this. We have community spread that had gone down quite a bit. It's picking back up again in Arizona. So it's not over yet.
And so many people have decided not to get the vaccination. When I asked Chief Ryan, I honestly, Dylan, I thought the answer to my question would be a higher percentage than what the chief told us. He told us of the self-reporting of the fire department about 30%. Didn't you think the figure would be higher?
That's, you know, right around where we're seeing the general population in Arizona. We have about 33 or 34% of the population has been fully vaccinated. About, I think, you know, low 40s have gotten at least one shot for those folks who are getting the two-shot number. That might be a couple of percentage points low. It's not quite apparent how people who are getting vaccinated through the VA, whether they're being included in many of those state numbers or not. So, and, you know, the VA has had a pretty extensive vaccination push themselves. So that might be a little bit more. But, you know, and now that we're seeing really some pretty, measurable turnout from teenagers who are eager to get their shots now that they are finally eligible to do so. You know, they're lining up, and that's going to, you know, bump that, you know, percentage of the entire population that's getting vaccinated up. But we're still, you know, way, way short of the 70%+ that the, you know, infectious disease experts tell us is necessary to get, you know, that quote unquote herd immunity.
It will be interesting to see if the city, well, if the county decides to say that masks are not required for people fully vaccinated, how businesses in Pima County then will respond. It is confusing, I think, for many people, Dylan Smith, to say the least.
You know, it's not helpful when we have a whole lot of people who are, you know, such extreme opponents of the vaccination program that they're lying to people about whether they've been vaccinated or not. And, you know, it's a little bit curious. Some of those anti-vaxxers are so indoctrinated with QAnon nonsense that they have now decided that they're going to be wearing masks in public because they're afraid of coming close to people who have been vaccinated.
What?
Yeah, they think that people who have gotten the vaccine are, I don't know, somehow shedding 5G chemtrail particles that will infect them or something. They're just nuts.
All right, Dylan, before we let you go, Representative Fincham, Mark Fincham, threatening to sue this recall campaign over the Capitol riot claims. Can you briefly articulate that story that appears in Inside, that appears in the TucsonSentinel.com?
Fincham is facing a recall campaign. He's trying to run for Secretary of State and is not very happy that the folks behind the recall are spreading the word that he is closely connected with the Oath Keepers militia group, and maybe he didn't directly participate in the attempted takeover of the U.S. Capitol, but he was there on January 6th and, you know, on the Capitol grounds, and is, you know, is threatening a lawsuit against them to so that they, you know, stop telling people this. And of course, that's a pretty empty threat. He would be not very wise to actually file that lawsuit. It wouldn't go very well for him, I don't think. But he's not not a big fan of the things that are being discussed about him right now.
You had an interesting call Tom just shared with me. The caller said that it is so confusing leaving Fincham for a moment. Back to the mask situation. This caller was saying that one store was saying, and I won't give the name of the of a well known store, saying, "Come on in, no masks are required." And then, like almost next door or right down the block, another very well known store that everybody would recommend or recognize says masks are required. So there you go.
Well, you know, it's still the law in Pima County until there's some sort of action by the Board of Supervisors. that businesses are required to require people to wear masks. We'll see if that changes. I imagine it'll change at least a little bit this afternoon, but just how much, I'm not quite sure.
You know, those numbers seem to be, and I follow them, I know you do as well, the case numbers have pretty much been below 100, haven't they, Dylan Smith, pretty much every day here in Pima County?
In Pima County, yeah, you know, across Arizona, basically both in Pima and statewide, we're seeing a steady rate of new infections and, hospitalizations and deaths, about what we were looking at when back in September, sort of when things were still, spreading, but in between the spikes that we saw in the middle of the summer and then towards the end of the year, in December and January, when things were just awful. So, some of the doctors and nurses I've been talking to lately are expressing some relief. They think that maybe we've, turned the corner and that thing, we are certainly not going to see new cases stop right away, but we can, if people continue to practice a little bit of common sense, we can, keep pushing things down. But there's still a lot of potential, especially with the new variants, for things to get pretty bad again fairly quickly.
All right. Tom, do I have time to take Wayne's call real quickly? Wayne, I've got about 30 seconds. Real quickly, please. Wayne, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, Dylan, I take exception to your slandering of people, calling them anti-vaxxers, people who decided not to take the vaccine, at least at this time, and, relating them to chemtrails. What kind of nonsense is that?
There are people out there who are saying that people who have gotten the vaccine are shedding particles that will somehow harm other people. That's scientifically ridiculous. It's not slanderous to say so. That's just silly. Sure, there are people out there who have different reasons for not getting vaccinated. Some of them may be more legitimate than others. Some people have, some pretty stringent religious beliefs that don't allow them to do anything in of that nature. But if you think that somehow because someone has been vaccinated that they are going to hurt you, that's just crazy.
Okay. We will leave it right there. Dylan Smith, thank you very much, Dylan, for taking part in the show.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot. Buckmaster on a Friday continues inside Tucson business, food and beverage columnist, award-winning Tucson publicist Matt Russell will have Weekend Watch right after this.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Weekend Watch with Matt Russell. Inside Tucson business, food and beverage columnist, Weekend Watch, presented by our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, where it's 73 during the noon hour. I could go for those temperatures right about now in the beautiful 5,000 to 7,000 foot area of Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Time for a road trip over to Silver City, New Mexico. Once again, open to out-of-state visitors, lots to do over there, and you can check out their website, give you a lot of great recreation ideas, southwestnewmexico.org for Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Let's welcome now the longtime host of Weekend Watch on our program, Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great, Bill. Boy, 73 degrees at the noon hour sounds pretty darn good to me.
Sit back out there on the porch with a glass of vino.
That's right. You know, being so close to two of Arizona's three wine regions means lots of fun events for people who enjoy fermented grape juice with a kick. And this weekend is no exception, Bill, with the annual Wilcox Wine Country Spring Festival tomorrow and Sunday from 11 to 5 at Railroad Park in downtown Wilcox. You're going to see nearly 15 wineries pouring samples of their best. There's going to be live music and services and goods from more than 20 local vendors. There's going to be craft beer as well, if that's more your speed. So here's what to do. First and foremost, assign your designated driver and then go to wilcoxwinecountry.org for all the information and tickets. It's going to be a blast.
Sounds like a winner. Any indoor dining resuming in some well-known eateries?
So excited to report this. You know, some of our local restaurants have chosen to remain focused on takeout and delivery through the pandemic, but they're starting to turn their lights on in their dining rooms once again, and I am pleased to report that the Sonoran Brunch Company on 22nd Street near Kolb is now open for indoor dining. I think this is one of the East Side's great diners. I was there just yesterday morning for a grilled chorizo and egg burro topped with melted cheese and enchilada sauce. Bill, they practically needed a dolly to transport that bad boy to the table. You know, in addition to burros, you know, you're going to see tacos and biscuits and gravy, burgers and sandwiches, all the brunch classics. Get over to Sonoran Brunch Company this weekend and enjoy the great indoors.
And before we go, let me wish you a national happy BBQ Day.
It is. National Barbecue Day is on Sunday, May 16th. All the smokers around town are going to be ready for you. You can choose from the usual suspects like Brother John's, Brushfire, Ken's Hardwood Barbecue, or you can even check out some of the newer joints to hit the barbecue scene like the Salted Pig in Oro Valley and Boulevard Barbecue on Speedway. Wherever you land, and if you're like me, that means landing at multiple destinations, you're going to be in good hands as you get your own hands a little sticky, a little saucy. Happy National Barbecue Day, Bill.
Have a great weekend. Thank you, Matt.
Cheers.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program.